accept, okay. Vote separately, yeah.
All right. All those in favor of accepting the minutes of January 4th, 2007, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And I think we have one abstention.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move. Do we, on the minutes of January 9th, 2007, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries seven. Oh, a comment, I'm sorry.
On the meeting of January 9th, I believe that Mrs. Dickinson had asked for an advance agenda item on a discussion of West Ed.
Oh, right.
And I had seconded that, and then subsequently we had much discussion about it. I think that the motion and the second got lost in the discussion. I'm going to withdraw that second because I would like to get the additional information that was SLCTA was going to provide to us on teacher input. So I withdraw the second for the time being, but I would like it noted that it was moved and seconded.
Okay.
At the January 9th meeting.
When you say you were the second person to support,
exactly.
That. Okay. So
agendizing.
Can I ask for clarification about one thing?
Sure.
I thought that it didn't go to a vote because it was going to come in a Friday package.
But it was second. That's all you need.
I thought it was coming in a Friday package. That was my understanding.
Can I say something?
Yeah, please. Let's just get some clarification here.
I think I'm glad Marilyn brought this up because if I understand our protocol, if you want to have something on the agenda, you only need one person to agree with you, and it you don't have to vote on it.
That's correct. We don't have votes on that.
So we you know, technically it should be on the agenda, but we without actually asking us, is it okay if we don't put it on? It was kind of wiped off the slate.
Okay.
So Mrs. Roger is willing to have that be an okay thing that happened, but it is good to note it.
So, Mrs. Holmes, are you okay? I think where we're going with this is that there was a request by Mrs. Dickinson to have an agenda item on West Ed that Mrs. Roger supported. That would have been the two for the agenda item. Mrs. Roger is now saying that she wishes to withdraw that support until she gets more information. Okay.
All I'm saying is that the action on the table at this time is the minutes of the 9th.
Okay,
so
it.
We just need to correct that action to reflect
okay.
Mrs.
Yes,
Dickinson
exactly.
and Mrs. Rogers'
okay.
request that night. And tonight she can talk about this during advance agenda and change her point of view.
Then we'll deal with that then. Thank you, Mrs. Holmes, as always. Okay, getting back to the minutes of January 9th, I believe that we have voted to accept those minutes. Okay. Public comment. We have actually correspondence. The board did receive some correspondence from Dr. Crocker, County Superintendent of Schools, positively certifying our fiscal year 2006-2007 first interim report on the budget as submitted. And he does commend us on our 5% reserve for economic uncertainty. Mr. Spadafore, did you receive some correspondence too that you'd like to discuss as well?
Just that you could note that as correspondence
okay.
received.
Okay. We did receive
yeah.
correspondence from the San Luis Symphony, and we'll share this with the board as well. Moving on then. To public comment, we have, I believe, one request to speak. Mrs. Chapman.
Is this working?
There's a switch on top, Vela. Right up there by your finger.
Okay, there I am.
There you go.
Fela Chapman, Science Department Chair, Morro Bay High School. I'm here on another matter tonight, but I thought while I was here I'd mention this. I don't know if you've heard the frustration at the teaching level about the situation of computers at the schools, and in particular, science and ag geared up 2 years ago to really go into using computers because it looked like the way that the district was going, along with the digital high school grant. And so we managed to get 7 computers in each of our 5 classrooms over there. We started developing programs to use them with, and we continued to develop up until the end of last year when all of the computers were removed except for our teacher computer. I now have 2 back. They are the updated 98s. I can't use them yet because they have not been reconfigured by the district, so I'm still working with just my single computer in the classroom. It's very frustrating because I developed these materials. Our other teachers developed all of these materials to use with groups in the classroom so that we could work in a more technological way and get more use from it, and they're not there now. I know it's frustrating all the way across the line, and I just wanted you to hear from us that something needs to be done. We need some kind of agreement amongst the board, the district, the schools, as to how many computers we can have, how much it's going to cost us, are we going to have to pay overhead, are we going to get technicians to take care of 2 of my 4 classes to the computer lab, and the other 2 I had to work between Mr. Tomac's room and mine in groups of 7, and it was difficult. So it's there, we use it, but we also use online sources. We have teaching aids that we use in groups with the computers. We allow the kids to use the computers for research. We try to teach them about research using the computers. It's all very difficult when we don't have enough computer labs that we can get into.
Okay, thank you. It's really not the board's policy to address these as during public comment. If board members have an interest in pursuing this, what we would do is talk about this during advanced agenda. So
that's
thank
fine.
You very much, Mrs. Chapman.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to address the board at this time? Okay. Seeing no one, do we have any reports by school staff this evening? Okay, seeing no one. Mr. Miller, would you like to report on the status of the state budget? I think you were just up in Sacramento hearing about it, weren't you?
Yeah. It was an interesting conference on Wednesday of last week. And the essence of the governor's proposals for the budget that are going to be debated by the legislature, nothing's agreed upon, leave education in a fairly positive position. There are no takeaways, something which I feared and many people feared because the structural deficit still exists and isn't necessarily cured. And you can listen to the criticisms of this governor's budget and come away believing that even his proposals are not doable remains to be seen. I found over the years that the governor's proposals have a way of growing legs and becoming enacted simply because he is the governor, and that's generally where the power rests when it comes to the budget. So we will have to watch carefully about all of his programs that he's proposed. But in terms of education, we've had what is termed as a boring year in the budget process, which is absolutely a positive as far as I'm concerned. And there's only a single aspect which is such a different kind of proposal that I'm not quite sure how to judge it at this moment. But he's proposing to take home-to-school transportation funding out of the Prop 98 and put it into the general fund under the auspice of the Public Transportation Agency. And to define that a little further, the Public Transportation Agency is not considered to be positive. Okay, homeschool transportation has not been funded in years to the extent that it costs, nor has it received a COLA in many years. So this is an opportunity to get folded into an agency which seems to have upward mobility in terms of revenues because of the price of gasoline. But who's to say? And then, should they have a downside year, who's the new child on the block that is going to be funded last because we already have 56% of the statewide budget anyway, so why are we taking money from public transportation? It is a proposal we'll have to look at.
One of the concerns I have, although I understand that they're denying this is that I was a little worried that it might cause a rebase of Prop 98 lower than what we already have.
There's the aspect that 4% of the Prop 98 bubble as it exists is greater than 4% of the Prop 98 bubble as it would exist under this proposal. So the state funding is going down in many areas. Example, and we'll talk about real estate taxes in a minute as it applies to us specifically, but in the last 4 years, there's been dramatic increases in property taxes on a local level. If you remember that revenue limits for normal districts, about 50% of it is property tax and 50% of it is state backfilled. As this property taxes continues to go up, the state backfill continues to shrink. So the state has enjoyed some savings in terms of how much money is required because their backfill piece has gone down. In addition to that, for the first time last year, continues this year, will continue next year, statewide ADA is in decline. It's a 0.53 projection for 07-08. On the number of students in the state of California, that is a huge number of ADA that's going away in terms of state funding. More than 50% of the districts in the state are in declining enrollment. It's presenting some significant issues for revenue limit districts. But it is a cost savings to the state of California. In the end, the budget that we are looking at for education in 07-08 is a far, far better world than we were looking at in 05-06. 06-07 was a stellar year, the year we're in right now. We will see how it develops for 07-08, but I like the word boring for the budget in terms of the state of California in Sacramento, but it just hadn't registered on me, and that is that the price of your home today is going to be the same in 2011. That's a huge impact on us. And the reason is we are funded on property taxes, and the basis of our increases in the past 2 years has been substantially the price of the tax assessor's role in the new sales price. Many, many people have turned in, if you will, their home that they've owned for 20 years and enjoyed a huge profit on it. We reap the benefit of that in terms of a higher tax base and more income coming to us. What I'm nervous about, what I'm concerned about, and what I'm going to continue to investigate is that we have enjoyed 6, 8, and 12% increases. I don't think it's going to come near those amounts in 07-08. I think that the static price of the static price of homes, for one thing, but the volume of homes being so little is the impact that I'm beginning to get most concerned about. If we don't get substantial turnover of inventory, we don't enjoy a higher percentage increase in the taxes. I talked to the county auditor's office today, and their feeling at the moment in the county of San Luis Obispo, which extends, of course, Paso Robles, Napomo, is that it's a 9% increase in property tax values. But substantial pieces of that are commercial and residential developments in the growing areas, which we are not. We have a very stagnant pool of properties. They don't really expand too much. Certainly commercial development at this moment is not a big deal for us. And when we look at the volume of homes being static, I'm very concerned about what kind of a prognostication we can make in our budget talks. And I've talked to Ed, I've talked to the principals, and I think that our most conservative and safest approach at the moment is to consider that if the county is determining a 9%, maybe we can find some correlation in the past of the county's growth to our own growth, even in good years, and try and correlate that number. But that we could be looking at 3%, 4%, 5%, something much, much less than what we've enjoyed in the past few years. So it is a turn. The county auditor is going to have to really do some delving into different kinds of numbers in order to give us a good prognostication for our own district boundaries.
And the proposed development or the in-process development in Central and Southern San Luis Obispo wouldn't make up for the flattening out of the property tax rates that you're talking about?
It's just not a big enough volume.
Okay.
The infill that is being proposed is still several years away from taking on any significant numbers. And more than likely, the infill is going to be stretched over a long period of time. So there are some little, like 5 units and 10 units, and that's infill for you. It's not 500 units like Paso or Napomo gets. It's very small numbers.
And I know I've talked to you about this before, but do we anticipate some of the major work that's being done at Diablo Canyon will increase the value of the plant and increase our tax revenues, either by direct tax revenue from them or through the unitary tax?
Two serious points about the unitary tax. One is that their prognostication at the auditor's office is it might go up 1%. This would mark the third year in a row it's gone up 1%, which is far better than the other 19 years behind that, where it was down 2% almost every year. So this is a good thing. Of course, the Supreme Court has ruled now that PG&E must go through the EIR process on its dry cask storage system. Should the EIR be favorable, okay. Should it be unfavorable in terms of being able to contain a terrorist threat, that will determine many, many different kinds of outcomes, none of which I'm prepared to talk about because I don't know. But I do know the EIR process can determine different design features that would be very expensive to implement. I don't know what PG&E's corporate thinking is about the dry cask storage and the turbine replacement, but all of the development that they do ultimately comes to us in the form of increased property values. So as Diablo goes forward, that's a positive in terms of our revenues. As it comes to a standstill, okay, it's probably a static piece. One more thing about unitary tax. There's a new law that's been actually passed but not chaptered to the point where it's been detailed out. Excuse me. But unitary taxes are now going this morning. I can find out later. It doesn't make a whole lot of...
That's tax base.
That's not tax revenues. Yeah. But, you know, 2% of that or whatever. I don't even know what they value on the tax rolls or what they assess a railroad tax on. But anyway, it's a change that's in the positive vein of things. It'll give us a little bit more money. I don't know how much. But I think the thrust of my comments are to prepare you for the idea that perhaps as we go forward, what we've enjoyed in the past are some discretionary revenues to spend on programs and other issues which were important. We may have already spent our revenues in terms of contracts to be honored with employees and benefits and other things that escalate. Discretionary revenues for 07, 08 might be minimal to nothing. We'll have to wait and see. Thank you.
Well, I just had a question, Russell. On that bus thing with the governor, would that change any regulations at all, like requiring seatbelts or anything, if it were to switch from school districts to urban transportation or whatever?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I doubt it. I think that school bus transportation is a very specific area of law. It has its own rulings. All school buses must be yellow. All of them must have, mm-hmm. Certain equipment on them, okay. Things like that. So at this moment, I'm not sure, but I don't think so.
Okay.
Mr. Miller, did...
Yes.
Did the governor's budget proposal address at all the issue of mandated cost reimbursement?
It did not. And it was very disappointing that they didn't. And I would be feeling a lot more optimistic if we were able to get the additional $350,000 that's owed to us by the state of California, constitutionally guaranteed. But he made $1,000 per claim, an allocation in his budget for mandated costs. That amounts to $32,000 statewide. Our claims are $350,000. However, it's generally felt that if the May revise, when we come up to the May revise, that's the time when the governor looks at the real revenues that are coming in, If it happens to be positive in the sense there's more than what he projects today, then the thinking is the first thing he wants to fund is funding for mandated costs. We'll have to wait and see.
Thank you.
No, I don't off the top of my head. But if we have 350, it's
a special fund for several years until after the potential audits where they could have the take-backs. Is that
that's
what
correct.
You're agreeing as well?
And then that's exactly what we did. We got $900,000. It's now in a reserve for mandated costs, and we'll wait 3 years and see what happens. On the battlefront of these audits that have – they're applying new rules that didn't exist when the claims were filed 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And those rules are so onerous that 80% of all audited claims are being denied. So they're returning millions of dollars back to the state coffers through their auditing techniques. What has happened is there's two lawsuits that challenge the state's audit techniques, and one of them has already received a positive ruling, not a final decision, but a positive ruling on a technical aspect of it, and the other one is in front of a judge who ruled 3 years ago in favor of school mandates on a separate issue. So they're both in front of judges who understand the issue, and they're both in front of judges who have had a history of ruling favorably. I honestly can't figure how the state of California can defend its techniques of auditing these mandated costs the way that they are. They're auditing rules that didn't exist, and it's very difficult for the school districts to be able to look in their crystal ball and say, oh, in 3 years I'll be audited, so I need to make sure I've done this. Now, what we did was we followed what the published rules were. So bottom line is it's happening. They are denying 80%. They're requiring repayments, and we want to be prepared for that, so we're not going to necessarily spend the money that we have. But should the lawsuits be successful, then it could open up for us this one-time money that's in our budget.
Thank you.
Shall we move on to item number 3? It's a public hearing. The Board of Education's negotiation proposals for California School Employees Association, Chapter 89. Mr. Robinette.
Certainly. We actually have two public hearings in a row. One is for the board's reopener proposal. We are scheduled to begin negotiation sessions with the California School Employees Association this coming week. And so this is an opportunity for any public comment prior to beginning those.
And hearing that, I'll open the public hearing for this. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this issue? Seeing no one, I'll close this public hearing. Move on to item number 5, proposed revisions to board policy 6146.1, instruction high school graduation requirements. Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, President Unger. Last year, the board added the career technical ed requirement to our visual and performing arts foreign language requirement for the class of 2010 and beyond. Class of 2010 are our current freshmen. We've discovered that the Ed Code requires 1 year of visual and performing arts or foreign language for a high school diploma in the state of California. It doesn't allow for the career technical ed option. So this option must be removed from our visual and performing arts foreign language requirement. This error was caught in time not to affect our current freshman class, according to the school officials. This raises a question to you as a board to decide whether or not you wish to establish a career technical ed requirement. If so, staff is prepared to discuss three possible options. We're not limited to these options, but they could be discussed for your review. And if I may, I'd like to go through each of those options. One option would be adding 10 credits to the foreign language visual and performing arts requirement, making this requirement a 20-unit requirement. We would expect that 10 of those units would be required in foreign language visual and performing arts. and the additional 10 units could be taken in visual and performing arts or foreign language, or an option for career technical education. This would make the career technical education option available as a choice, but not mandatory for our students. For your information, students who expect to matriculate to the UC-CSU system are required to take 2 years of a foreign language and 1 year of visual and performing arts. And that would not require them an additional career technical ed requirement in their schedule if we chose that option. A second option would be to add 10 credits of career technical education requirement that staff has reviewed and present for your consideration. Our principals are here and teachers are here to discuss this high school requirement possibility with you, and we look forward to your direction.
First, is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Mrs. Chapman.
If you remember from last year, we made quite a show for Morro Bay High School. Our concern is that we are losing a lot of students in the career technical field, and we feel that it's important that all of them do have something along this line. It doesn't matter if they're totally academic, if they're never going to college, if they're going to Stanford or what. They should have some of this. And so we would like to see the option two added as far as the agriculture. I'm talking about the agriculture department now. In that we get those 10 units put in, it would just be they wouldn't have that much choice of their electives. They would lose 10 units of elective from everywhere, and they would have to take a career technical ed course. It looks like the governor is aiming towards this, and the ag department has been doing a lot of talking in Sacramento about the option. And somewhere down the line, it's going to come in, and we would like to see it in now as a required 10 units CTE for graduation. Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay. Board members, do we have some discussion? Mr. Buckman.
As I reviewed this item, I looked at the board policy. And right under number two, it says, because graduation from high school provides students with opportunities for post-secondary education and or employment, and I found that phrase very telling because, for me, a lot of times we lose sight of the fact that education in and of itself is important. Education as a goal to get to college is important, but at some point our students need to have a career. And so I would urge that we look at one of the items that includes something that supports the concept that public education ultimate goal is to provide children with a path towards a career.
This would have more flexibility.
Well, I have our principals here this evening, and I worked through the principals in terms of soliciting input on this item. So. They're here tonight. Would you like to hear from them?
Or so I think like since Dr. Matakovich has asked for a phone line, what is that called? Helpline?
Yes. Is that what it is?
That'd be great.
I'd like to
a friend, or you call.
Yes.
What is that called? You call somebody on the line?
Support line
call? It'd be helpful.
Well, I can certainly summarize what each of the principals have said. Yeah. You have them here tonight, and they have spoken with their staff. So.
Yeah. No, it'd be... it'd be helpful to hear what the input's been from the various staff, people who are involved with the students, regarding the flexibility, non-flexibility of this issue.
Thanks. Pete Zonovich, Morro Bay High School. Up to a few years ago, the applied arts requirement, which we now call CTE, was a requirement. It was a one-year applied arts requirement in our school district up to maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And we didn't feel that it was limiting to students. They were taking that requirement. It gave the four departments that are in that particular area some students to take the necessary classes that they felt that they needed, because it gave students a really good, we felt, a well-rounded education. It was then determined that maybe kids needed more flexibility to pick the classes they needed to. At Morro Bay High School, that's not on a trimester, that's an alternating block, we have seen our CTE classes, applied arts classes, start to dwindle, students making options to not take those classes. And so we felt that if we could bring this back in, this would still be a great option for kids to be able to take. And yes, it does limit their another 10 credits of flexibility from their schedule, but we feel that with the 60 or 70 credits they have for flexibility, it isn't affecting them that much. It is a big push in the state now. The governor does talk about it quite often. We don't know if he is going to bring it back as a requirement, but it is something that we felt that then it gave kids an opportunity to really explore some different avenues. Yes, we did have some very high power college level students that didn't want to take the applied arts. There were some cases of kids that did take it and really enjoyed what they were doing, and one of them actually got into the business, that part of it, because they, after they went to college, they did get back into the applied arts area that they wanted to be in, because they really enjoyed that. They would have never had that experience if they hadn't tried it. So our schedule is probably driving this along with our teachers.
So it sounds like you're recommending the second item on this sheet to have it again become a requirement, at least for 10 units?
For myself, it's not a recommendation either way. Either one of those, almost all my students take 2 years of foreign language or a foreign language and a fine art anyhow. So that would just give some of the kids that took that the opportunity, if they didn't want to do the second year, they could just take the CT instead. Or leave that at 10 and go ahead and put in the CTE requirement. I did have a third option, something for you to consider, but it's just something that I talked to staff about, would be that it would be a 10-credit CTE requirement, but it could be waived for those students that felt that they were going to go to a high-power college and it might get in the way of their college goals and aspirations. So with counselor approval and administrator approval, they could waive the CTE, the 10-credit CTE requirement. Could potentially be another option. Our CTE staff feels that they didn't particularly like that option because they really feel that every student should have the opportunity to take one of the classes in home ec, ag, business and computers, and the industrial technology. So that would be kind of a third option that's it's kind of a compromise more.
Question, Mr. Zotovich? What I see here is we're talking ag, business and computer education, home ec, and industrial technology. Has there been any thought in the discussion to alternate kinds of classes for career and technical education? For example, as you know, my son is a musician, so could a business class be a business music class? Or could industrial technology be instrument repair or something like that?
I know that
we've got that class with Mr. Norelli and Mr. Right. Bellier too. Right. So I'm just kind of exploring that option.
Well, part of our problem at the high school is I think that we're starting to engage in conversations about, are we offering too much and do we need to narrow? And if we offer too much, it becomes, teachers wise, where do we get the teacher to teach it? Okay. But in the music area, that would be a great, we could do a music kind of class that would fit into the vocational and fine arts area, because they do have, you know, since that's a requirement now, so many of our kids are taking that much more than they ever did before. And so our teachers have found that we have plenty of art classes.
In 1998, part of the idea was to adopt a schedule that would allow students flexibility and choice. And they have that. They're able to take 15 classes a year for a total of 300 units over the 4 years they're in high school. They need 270 to graduate. The numbers of our students participating in career technical education classes is probably at an all-time high because of the options that are available to students and the flexibility within their schedule. Students are already choosing to take, at a rate of about 70% throughout their course, their high school career, choosing to take career and technical education classes without being forced to do so as a result of a requirement. Students are also taking 2 years of foreign language, if not 3 years of foreign language, to qualify for the UC and CSU admission, even though it's only required that they have two, and they're taking 10 units of visual and performing arts already in order to qualify, meet the A through G requirements for UC-CSU admission. So at San Luis Obispo High School, we really feel like the requirements are fine where they are, that we don't need to add any additional requirements because we believe we have a very healthy career technical education program in place already, award-winning on many levels, and we're okay with that. I would also want to add one more factor to this. With the changes that are taking place in physical education, where 9th and 10th grade students will no longer be able to earn PE credit for athletics, in effect, that is adding for many, many students 10 more credits of required PE class. And they now will be taking two PE classes in 9th grade, two PE classes in 10th grade, and they'll also be playing sports that they'll earn elective credit, but they won't earn PE credit. So in a sense, their options are being narrowed by that new requirement for the elimination of sports as credit for PE. So considering that, adding that factor in as well, I think that for us anyway makes the argument even stronger to maintain the credits where they are right now.
It's becoming increasingly clear to students that high school education is not enough, and they're going to have to go on to some kind of postgraduate, you might say, post-high school diploma training. And when I work with special education, so it's not real obvious, you know, how accessible and that's going to be to go on. But I'm to say what I want to say, I'm in favor of maximum, but I think we need to watch out for too many requirements because kids are all different, and we don't want to weaken our music programs and things like that either. So I would vote for flexibility and hope that, as you say, those programs are going to remain strong and attended.
Well, I agree with Mr. Zotovich in that one of the things we're doing right now, which I think is going to promote those classes without making them a requirement, is the depth we're going to provide students with counseling on career and college choices. For instance, right now, at this moment, at San Luis Obispo High School, we're having meetings, counselors are meeting with every 10th grade student and their parents. That's set up for every 10th grade student at the school. And they get to spend time in the Career Center, and then they look at their four-year plans. They make revisions based on what's going on with their choices for later on, and the career options are discussed and choices that they have for curriculum that they can focus on. So I think there are ways to encourage students to participate in those classes without making it a requirement, and I think that provides that option.
One more question? I had one more question for principals. If someone is wanting to go the employment route and really doesn't want to go to college, do they have enough time in their schedule to really, you know, get a good training in some of these areas? Or are they so constrained by, you know, having to take lab science and algebra and things like that? I mean, maybe they could, I don't know, this is kind of radical, but get a waiver out of some of those classes so they can concentrate more on things that they're really going to use in a career. I guess you can't, that's a side, never mind, that's not on the agenda, but can they do that though? Are there enough, do they have enough room in their schedule to take a lot of those classes?
They have enough room in their schedule to take a sequence, or maybe a sequence and a half. But I would remind you that the requirements that we have in our core curriculum is really kind of, it's for the future student, I want to just go do welding my whole life, I still better know English, math, social studies, and science, because that's becoming such a big issue in this country where we're going. It isn't the same society that we remembered when we were growing up. It's a whole new thing that we're going to. And what Mr. Jones said about PE doesn't affect Morro Bay High School, because our kids can easily take the new PE courses that are going to have to be offered and still take their, in an extended day, still take their athletics. So it works out well for them.
The kids' maximum flexibility in this case. And I'm not sure I understand why we wouldn't do that, especially if there are kids who are very goal-oriented, particularly, you know, oriented toward the CSU system or on a path like that. And, And they may want to take 3 or 4 years of a foreign language or additional science classes or additional biology classes or something like that that is, you know, within line of the career path that they know that they're heading down. So I'm, you know, I'm very open to learning more about this issue. It's a new issue for me to begin to understand here. Perhaps the way to go would be to have some sort of a compromise solution like Mr. Zordovich suggested, where if we ultimately did decide that this would be a requirement, to let those kids, after meeting with a counselor, that are destined on a specific path to perhaps opt out if they're taking, you know, courses that are in line with, you know, an advanced degree or something like that down the line.
My turn. Thank you. I wanted to ask Will, and you don't necessarily need to come back up. It sounds like you favor the status quo. I'm just unsure about what the status quo means. Is it no requirement for that?
There would be no CTE requirement, yeah.
Okay. Will is saying that the status quo is that there would be no CTE requirement. You know, I guess the first option didn't make any sense to me the last time we talked about it. I didn't know why we were lumping it in with visual and performing arts. The second one option appeals to me because of the requirement nudging some of our little lambs into the career tech area and expanding their horizon some.
Are you suggesting they take ag courses?
And then the third one, which I hear Will saying is working fine, it's slow high, but I'm also hearing Pete say, you know, Morro Bay kids are making hard decisions that are opting, that are moving away from CTE. So I guess my question is, why isn't this a site-based decision?
It would be a site-based decision if it was, well, it wouldn't be a site-based decision about a graduation requirement because that, I believe that would be a district policy, but if there were no CTE requirement, it would be a student-based decision.
Which is a site-based decision of sorts? Yeah, okay. So I guess I'm kind of coming down because of what I'm hearing from the folks who have to do it every day. Ms. Lopez, do you have any? I guess you don't have the same kind of issues for
here tonight for whatever reason, but the career technical education departments are defined by state, so that's why you see the four departments that are listed there. When they apply, we had the requirement as an applied arts requirement. There were a couple of other courses that went through the district comparable credit process to get district credit towards the applied arts. And so I see that as something, just as there are some career technical education departments or classes that have gone through that process to receive district fine arts credit. So I see that as the question that came up, why could we not have some of these other courses that may not be specifically in these four departments? I see that as a possibility to have it a little more broad-based. Career technical education courses do lead to professional-level jobs. They lead to positions that require BAs and master's degrees. I think we tend to see them at the high school level for students that may or may not be going on to college, and more so for students that may not be going directly on to a UC or CSU. So I guess that's the frustration on the part of those departments. We see requirements for students that are going on to education consistently being put in. The career technical education departments requirements are consistently not put in, even though they speak to careers at entry-level position, technical position, and professional levels. So some of what I'm thinking as I'm sitting back there and hearing is some of that philosophical piece to it as well. We talk about maybe doing more PR to get students into those courses. There are some students that don't have the time to get into those courses because of the other courses that they're choosing to take, and that certainly is a choice, and that certainly provides the flexibility for them. However, there are other students, as was mentioned, that once they get into the courses and they need the little lamb that needs the little nudge, sees that as a pathway for them. So I guess it's, you know, it's it's kind of a, how much do we encourage them and provide the comprehensive education and have the requirements so that they get a feel for everything, and how much do we...
I just will share very briefly, when I came to California as a brand-new public high school senior, I got to go to an extra semester because I came from back east where there were no career, in those days, vocational kinds of classes. So I spent an extra semester taking art, arts and crafts, graphic arts, and one other class that involved a dark room. That's all I remember. So I kind of favor the requirement because I agree you make a philosophical statement to not only students but also to the folks who have to, you know, get up every morning and try to teach kids about vocational ed and career technical education. So I guess I would favor two, but I would be hopeful that we would make some sort of accommodation or some sort of process that would not make it such a rigid proposal that where it would be inappropriate, we couldn't do something about it.
I was fortunate enough to be sitting in the audience the last time this came up, and I clearly heard staff in favor of some kind of requirement. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, I read the Morro Bay bulletin, and it's actually in the minutes. The most often stated issue in the parent survey was the desire to receive more information on non-college options for students. So what I'm hearing is we have staff and we have parents who are both looking for other options besides purely college-bound classes. I see some value adding value to these classes by requiring them. And I just can't stress the need that I feel and see and hear among students that there needs to be some stronger link between what they're doing in the classroom and what they're going to be doing 4 or 5 years later if they do go to school, and saying all of this work is to get me to the point where I can earn a living. So I am also leaning towards option two, although I'm wondering if it isn't possible that there are more options available than just these three. I just throw that out.
I had three-core CTE. What would be involved for the schools to gear up for that? Would that involve wholesale changes from what we have at this point to gear up for that requirement by the state? And then the third one would be, how does the availability of counseling for students at Cuesta College, which we've discussed in the past, to take certain career technical education classes there that would fulfill some of their needs but not require the schools, the two high schools, to lose flexibility, those three things? Does that make sense?
You'd like us to answer those questions now. In terms of question number one, the availability of courses, I'm not aware that any student has been turned away from any of our career technical education courses. They're available for all students. Would you agree? Okay. As far as a state requirement, I'm not aware of that conversation at the state level.
If it is required, if it comes to pass, sure, that in 5 years they say you have to have that as part of your graduation requirement, would it involve many changes with the two high schools to meet 10-unit requirement or whatever it may be from the state? Are we already ready to do that if it's required rather than just...
We have our courses in place. Yes. If our courses met the expectations that they've set, we're in place. If not, we'd have to revise our curriculum to match it.
Okay, then the third thing is, with Cuesta's availability regarding the class, the coursework they have relative to CTE-type courses, would the counselors be able, on an individual basis, to assist students who want additional courses in those areas, again, with Cuesta as an option, to help with that other issue regarding not losing flexibility at the high school, but providing direction to a place like Cuesta for those additional courses if that's what they desire.
Sure, and we provide that now with the 2+2 program in these areas. And so our counselors communicate with the counseling staff at Cuesta and those departments, and our students opt to take those courses. The 2+2 program, and Karen, help me if I'm not explaining exactly correct. We have courses that are matched to the program at Cuesta College, and our students take the exam of the course at Cuesta in our courses at the high school level. They pass the course and then go on to Cuesta and matriculate with.
Counselors certainly can contribute to the student's direction in terms of outside sources for certain courses if there are some at Cuesta. And then I think the other part is, by reducing the flexibility, what are we requiring students to decide at this stage in terms of how they would use the 10 units for that coursework if that's not something that interests them in school? I'm still concerned about the interest students have to go to classes that they're able to choose rather than what they feel they have in terms of a requirement to take. So the flexibility is very strong in terms of my sense that that's a good thing to maintain.
I'm going to weigh in now, and then I know Mrs. Dickinson and Mr. Buckman have some things to say. This conversation takes me back to one of my first board meetings, and that was when we talked about whether to have a computer education requirement at the high schools. And although I'm in favor of computer education and that kind of knowledge, I had to vote no on that. I lost, incidentally, but I had to vote no on it because I looked at Morro Bay High School that had a more restrictive block schedule. And I think what I have to look at is the difference between our graduation requirements and the A to G requirements that our students have to take when they want to go to CSU or UCs. What concerns me is that a student who's trying to do the A to G requirements at Morro Bay High School, basically, my recollection is they lose almost all of their electives other than language, foreign languages, which means if they want to take anything other than pretty much strictly the A to G requirements, they're either there at zero period before school or they're staying after school. And I think it places a burden on the students. Now, I think that Mrs. Lopez actually brought out, I think, one of the most important points about this, and that's the comparative credit issue. And a discussion I had with State Superintendent of Public Education Jack O'Connell was, what do you do to make career and technical education courses A to G compliant? Because I really think that's an issue that we should be wrangling with is, if we value career and technical education and we value the A to G requirements and we think that there's value in both of those things, what can we do to get career and technical? I am going to support number 3, but not that I don't support career and technical education. I think we need to look at new ways of delivering it and getting kids engaged in it because I think it is so important. And based on what we know Mr. Buckman pointed out from the Morro Bay High School parent survey, people do consider this important. I don't think adding another requirement at Morro Bay High School is something that I want to see happen for the students, and yet I want to see students taking career and technical education and making those courses as valuable as possible no matter what they want to do after high school. So Mr. Buckman and then Mrs. Dickinson.
Thank you. Good thoughts. However, I'm wondering if there isn't the possibility for another option, an option that says 5 units are required, an option that says 1 class that gives a lot of exposure could be a requirement. And I have to comment on the Cuesta College option only in terms of I'm not sure that it's really available to all students. In order to get to Cuesta College and back to school in time, to take your classes, you probably have to own your own car. And for some of the students that are going to be most wanting to take these classes, I'm not sure that Cuesta College is that option that we can hold out to them. So I guess one of the questions I have to staff is why only three options? Is there a possibility to look at some other options?
If I could respond a little, I think we tried to define a sort of generic range of possibilities. One is a standalone requirement. Another one is a requirement clustered with a limited choice, including CTE, which could be chosen or not chosen, and a wide open choice. And I think if the board can give us some kind of direction on which of those generic sort of directions you'd like to go, we could generate more options, although some of the options are fairly well defined just by saying that's what you're interested in.
I thought those points that Mrs. Lopez made were really important about how these lead to professional careers that require advanced degrees. I think that's an important point. I wanted to remind us all that we are having increased counselor time coming up, and that I think that we can get more information without having a requirement for graduation, and we have great classes which are available, and that counselors, when you have more time with your counselor, I see this in the IEP, where the team, including the teachers and parents and all, you know, notice some talents and gifts and aptitudes in students that they may not necessarily notice themselves, and say, you know what, have you thought about taking, you know, computer repair? I see you over here at the computer all the time, and, you know, and help kids think of ideas of careers they might go into that they might not have thought of. And I think one way that we could help kids get into these on a very individual basis, based on their aptitudes and interests, encourage them to take classes in this field, these fields that they might not have thought of, and that will happen more with more exposure to counseling. So I'd rather see it happen that way on an individual basis, and have strong programs available, and have PR for them, and have adults noticing who would be great, encouraging kids and helping them find their paths, and not have it be a requirement across the board. And I'm not really in favor of, I think everything should be open to waivers in general in life, but I think a waiver process, a widespread waiver process, takes a lot of time. So I'd rather just see the flexible program and have us all be helping kids find their paths.
I'd like to see staff come back with other ideas bounded between recommendation 2 and recommendation 3.
Well, I think career technical education is very, very important. And if I had to make a decision tonight, I would go for option 2. My sense is that most kids going into high school don't have a clear idea of what they're going to be doing. Some, I know, come in and they know they're on a path. They are, but I'm also mindful of the parental input that was received, at least at Morro Bay High School, that Mr. Buckman referred to. So if I were voting tonight, I would go for number 2, but I will agree with Mr. Millar that it would be nice for staff to come back with an option that is sort of a some kind of a hybrid of 2. Thanks.
Um, I strongly support the career and tech ed programs we have in our schools, and I think we should do everything we can to further invest in them and bolster them. But I don't think, I really think this is an area, I strongly believe this is an area where students should have choice, and students should be able to make decisions about whether or not they want to follow a path or find a course in this area that's of interest to them, but not be required to take it. We've talked a couple of times about the data that we have from the school sites, Morro Bay in particular. I've seen that data as well. I don't think we know that that data says that parents are necessarily asking for a requirement for career tech education, but just that we have good programs for their kids in that area. I think, you know, maybe one thing we could do is get back to those parents and ask them, you know, how they feel about this issue as well. But again, I'm pretty firmly on the side of flexibility on this issue.
So a question, I guess, for the board is, would somebody like to, do we want to come, do we want to see if there are other options and revisit this at another time and have more discussion on this, or would somebody like to make I want to offer a motion too and see if somebody wants to make a motion now. It's kind of up to, this is an action discussion item, so we can do one or both, and I just want to see if the board has any strong feelings about this.
Well, I make a motion that we go with option 3.
Okay. So we have a motion for option 3. Do we have a second? Or it can die for lack of a second. We can come back.
I think we owe it to the constituency to gather a little bit more data. Okay.
So would you like to second this, or would you like this to die from a lack of a second? Okay. So the motion dies for lack of a second. Do we want to make another motion, or is it the preference of the board to ask the staff to come back?
The original option, so that if you're partial to those, they would still exist, and bring back new options that may capture some of the thoughts that the board has for further discussion.
Is that what the board's interest is? Okay. Mr. Spatterfield?
I was just going to say and add to what Dr. Valentine's saying and what Mr. Millar had brought up earlier, that there's flexibility here, which we've been discussing tonight, in terms of two things. What can be done to enhance the career technical ed piece if it is something that can be addressed with this without making requirements that straitjacket students more than necessary? So I think the discussion is going to continue for the next meeting or two when that's looked at. But I think what I'm hearing tonight is it's important, and what David was saying, it's very important. And the second part is if we can maintain the integrity of the programs which exist and enhance them, plus continue with the flexibility, then it may address both of those issues.
Okay, let's move on to item number 6, planning for music, art, and physical education funding. Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, President Unger. Currently, there are 3 new program grants that are available from the California Department of Ed for program funding for this year. These grants are Arts and Music Block Grant, the Arts and Music PE Supply Equipment Professional Development Block Grant, and the Physical Education Teacher Incentive Grant. You asked for an update as far as where we are with the planning for these funds. I'd like to just describe the parameters of these grants and share with you what staff has done to this point in these areas. To begin with, the Art Music Block Grant is ongoing funding at $15.94 per student, approximately $116,000 to the school district. These funds are for staff and for standard-aligned materials. Its purpose is to implement the standards of the Visual and Performing Arts Program, K-12. Funding is intended to supplement existing resources for the arts and can be used for professional development. The Art, Music, PE Supplies, Equipment, and Professional Development Block Grant is a one-time allocation. It's about $600,000 to be spent across the school district to support the site boarded by multiple funding sources. We consider these funding sources to be included in that. We have completed a district-wide needs assessment. We've delineated current services and programs. We've participated in a professional development day sponsored by the State Department of Ed, centered around standards-based program implementation. Currently, we're looking at model programs being reviewed, and the committee will be in the process over the next 2 months to recommend to Curriculum Council, the principal's central administration, and then with the final recommendation to the superintendent to establish a program. We would consider the use of these funds to help support the program. The third funding source is Physical Education Teacher Incentive Grant, which would provide $35,000 grant for selected sites. These funds would be used to hire credentialed staff to help kids develop healthy, lifelong exercise habits. The applications haven't been distributed yet from the State Department of Ed, but we anticipate once the applications are available that we will apply for funds and hope that we would be selected to participate in this grant program. We have a K-12 physical education committee that has been involved in a 2-year professional development process, which includes standards review and curriculum development. The necessary instructional material supplies and further professional development will be identified and could be supported by these funds that are available to us from the state. I've indicated what the fiscal impact will be to our school district, that these funds can be carried over in the event that program decisions are not fully implemented this year. So we're counting on being able to carry over these funds. And Mr. Miller's assured us that these monies are coming our way. So eventually. Yes, I am, Russell. This is the information that we have to date in terms of these funding sources, and certainly we're up for your input on these areas.
Dr. Matakovich, not in any necessary order, but the PE teacher incentive grants, $35,000 per school site, if selected, is it the district is selected? And then all of our sites get 30. I tell you, as nice as it is to get additional information or additional monies, I don't know that this is going to enable us to do anything really dramatically different in our PE, visual, and performing arts programs.
Well, if you look at, we'll be anticipating $100,000 of ongoing funds to through the Arts and Music Block Grant. And what we turn that into in terms of program support will be the recommendation coming through the process as I spoke. The supplies money is significant, as well as professional development funds, and what we target in terms of those equipment needs and materials, I think, will be substantial in terms of its effect on our program. We just want to strategically place the funding in the right spots to get the most value, especially with a revised PE curriculum and looking at our art and music program.
And then my last point is I'm always nervous when we have ongoing, in parentheses, that these are going to be ongoing funding. I mean, these are the kind of programs that are lopped off when the first sign of trouble arises in Sacramento, so we hire people and assuming we're going to have some ongoing funds. I didn't mean to be pessimistic. I guess I was hoping that we could resolve a whole lot of things with PE and music and visual and performing arts, but we're grateful. I'll take it.
Dr. Matakovich, who's on the VAPA, the VAPA committee?
We have I think last count, about 18 community partners representing the visual and performing arts community, and representatives from each of our school sites, teachers, administrators participating.
And are the teachers then music and art teachers, or
they are? We have our visual and performing arts specialists at the secondary level, as well as our music specialists at the elementary level. Yes.
Okay, great. Because we all received, with the exception of you, Mark, last year, a great letter from Mr. Bellier, who's the
music teacher out in the schools on the coast in June, and he had some very specific recommendations about what we could do to improve our music programs. Yeah, and
he's on the committee.
Yeah, good. And that was really the heart of my question: is how do we draw the link from his specific recommendations here through to the committee and ultimately to allocation of funds? And it sounds like the right process is already in place and that he's participating.
I think we're going to end up with a very good plan.
Thank you.
How do you say Bryn's last name, our wonderful music? Bellier. I actually saved his his information that he sent to all of us. And I was going to read it again before this meeting, but I didn't get to it. But I'm really, that was, along with Marilyn, that's what I was thinking also, that he has such good ideas, and I'm glad he's on the committee. Oh, okay, cool. So that's reassuring, and I really think, I'm excited to hear what they come up with.
Thank you. A couple things in a broader conversation about this. What is there in the process regarding the idea of taking the one-time money and integrating it into the ongoing funds as long as they last? First of all, to support programs that will last rather than be lost. That's the first thing in terms of not taking the one-time money for the first year, but actually folding it in year after year with the ongoing money so there's more financial support. And the second thing is, in the general philosophical issue about integrating the art and music into the core curriculum, which has been a discussion among teachers and site administrators and the administration here, what's happening with that discussion in terms of, instead of having add-on art and music programs at the end of the day that can be lost every year depending upon funding or depends upon the site's choice that year, and it gives it an even educational opportunity for the students, where are we in terms of professional development for teachers to integrate art and music into the core subjects so it doesn't become something that is here for 5 years and then gone again, but it becomes part of a curriculum that is rich and ongoing. And that, I think, has to do with the professional development. So that's the second part, what's happening with the philosophical discussion about teaching art and music as part of the core curriculum. And the third thing is the time in the day. There's only so much time in the day. Where are we in terms of, if we don't integrate or fully implement these standards-based art and music into the ongoing daily curriculum, where would we find the time in the day to actually change?
Comment about folding in one-time money with ongoing money is, very right on as far as the committee goes. We have our action plans in place for all of those. We think they all go together. We think those are the areas that are lacking in our school district at this time. As far as the schedule goes, we just met today with all the elementary principals for a very long time to look at the individual schedules of individual students across grade levels to determine what are the competing instructional needs that we have at each level. We looked at the regular student, the accelerated student, the English learner student, the special ed student, and we are developing a common understanding of the expectations at each grade level. We want to assure you that all kids have access to the core curriculum, so this is the beginning of our conversation with the elementary principals. We're going to have special meetings to address this issue because we want to be prepared with what our capabilities are in terms of prioritizing our instructional needs, and we want you to be part of that conversation. So we're in the process of dealing with that right now with the elementary principals. As far as professional development being core, in order to deliver a core curriculum, you need that kind of support. And what shape that takes on, we've discussed partner specialist program as we have in music and physical education. We've talked about the artist in residence and several other model programs. So at this point, we are just exploring what those ideas would look like. And so I want you to know we have a commitment to those areas in terms of fashioning a program plan that will be able to be sustained in our school district.
Do you believe this is something that is going to take shape this school year, or is it more likely to take shape next school year?
Well, we're in the process of developing our recommendations that we would be able to come to agreement in terms of what that might look like by the spring, with the potential of implementing in the fall would be very optimistic on our part. I think we want to get going, but we also want to provide a solid program that we can sustain and that we have support for across the board.
So you're saying that art and music are part of core curriculum. Is that what
you're saying? An ongoing program would need an ongoing funding source. This is one, and certainly the general fund is another.
Okay. Shall we move on to item number 7? Request to lease broadband capacity to Clearwire LLC. Mr. Miller, do you have any new information for us?
Only on the two items that were requested from the last board meeting. One was whether or not what was meant by the district access to the spectrum, the 5%. While I am apologetic in that I don't know what it exactly means, I do know that the FCC requires that we retain 5% of the spectrum for our use. And so that's where the piece comes for the lease. It would look like they're going to supply us with approximately 20 modems, which will allow us to access their system. It doesn't mean that it's, as we were talking about at the last meeting, WiMAX. It just means access to their system. But beyond that, I don't have any more technical enlightenment for any of us. On the other item, the automatic renewal of the agreement, our attorney has informed us that the FCC has recently broadened the amount of years for these leases, and it's 30 years. And that's essentially where the 30-year piece comes from, 15-year lease with an option for an additional 15 years. So those are the new pieces that I was able to discern in the last 2 weeks.
Mr. Spadafore and then Mr. Peter.
You know, I was thinking about this since we've discussed it for several meetings, and I think the only question I have for the other members of the board, if not this, then what?
I was just going to actually ask you to clarify, but you may not have the additional information about what exactly that mean. It probably would not include WiMAX. I mean, that is specifically the business they are in. That's the service they offer. They offer two services. They offer internet phone service, voice over IP, and they offer WiMAX, which is effectively a brand name for, you know, a technical standard, a specification. But I'm really curious as to what they mean. They probably would not include WiMAX.
The attorneys. 5%.
It sounds like we're also waiting for feedback regarding the renewal term from the attorney, or have we since gotten that?
The 15 years and the 15 years? Yeah, she has responded to that and said that they require that the Board of Trustees validate the agreement, that they are requesting the 15 years and the 15 years based upon the FCC's length of lease contracts now, and that she does not see any possibility that they would renegotiate that particular piece. I actually asked for the right to do bilateral negotiations, as Walter had asked for, and she says it's not done. It's just not a normal practice within this field that you would engage in.
Yeah.
That's best I got, Walter. Sorry.
I don't know if I would call it not normal. I mean,
that was hers in terms of.
Maybe it is very specifically for this type of lease,
yeah.
I just hesitate to talk about this, actually, but because I feel like I don't know much about it. But it seems to me that when we are given broadbands for a public school, we've already talked about this before, it's to give, you know, public a voice in a democracy. And in the next 30 years, how do we know that we might not have some students who could come up with a radio station or something? I mean, we're shutting down the option of any of our kids in all these highly technical classes that we're promoting, learning enough about technology to figure out how to use broadbands for the district. And, you know, people scowl at me like, "Who? You don't know what you're talking about." But I don't know. I personally don't like the idea of selling this for only $37 a day to a corporation for the next 30 years. And I also feel like this has already been signed. I think we have the best business person in the whole state of California, and I've mentioned that before, our assistant superintendent in charge of business. But he already signed this, you know, a while back, the original agreement, and it looks like he's already signed the amendment. So I feel a little extraneous to the whole situation. Like, it's happening, it's already happened, and it doesn't really matter what I think.
Can I make
a point? Yeah.
You, as a board, this was signed as an agreement in principle.
So we're amending something that's not really binding yet, since we didn't really vote on that.
We agreed in principle to many aspects of this agreement, but it pends your ratification.
So the vote tonight on the amendment is really on the whole package, the original agreement and its amendment.
The original agreement's in place, and there's nothing we can do about this. Ratifying that. We're ratifying the agreement with ZTARC and the amendments that are...
The original agreement is in place.
That's already in place, yeah.
And which is, nothing's happening on that.
No.
But this, the amendment for this one goes with the previous one. Okay, so it's kind of a package thing we're voting on. Okay, thank you, Mr. Miller. Okay.
At this point, after all the discussion and sending the attorneys back and looking in my garage at the different various modems that I have from over the years that are now useless, I'm afraid if we wait one more week or one more month that we won't even have this offer on the table because some new technology will come. So I'd like at this time to make a motion that the Board of Education approve the First Amendment to Contingent Capacity Lease Agreement with Clearwire LLC dated October 20th, 2006 and the related documents with ZTARC Wireless LLC.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Carries 6-1. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Is there anybody who'd like to talk about the action consent agenda? No? Microphone?
Bring it up.
Item number 8, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 9, acceptance of donations. Item number 10.
I had one on poll on 8, sorry.
Okay, poll number 8. Number 11, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Number 12, approval of purchase orders. And number 13, approval of consolidated applications for funding categorical aid programs, part 2. Do I hear a motion?
I move we approve 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Peter and seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Mrs. Dickinson, item number 8.
I have a quick question on this one for Mr. Robinette.
They're defined in contract with the Teachers Association, and they... The majority of the money is for athletics, but we have stipends for our band directors, our choral directors. We have stipends for various activities, some of the career tech activities like the troubleshooter, the auto club. And we have stipends that go towards department chairs. We have stipends that go towards each of the elementary schools get stipends that they get to kind of distribute for... teacher leaders and different extracurriculars. We bring these to the board typically 3 times a year, and so what you see probably mostly on this list are sports because it coincides with the winter sports season.
I see.
At the end of the year, the stipend list and the one we presented I think a couple months ago are like the first half of the year, and it includes all the other.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Well, I make a motion that we approve item number 8, certificate and classified personnel items.
Okay. So we have a motion on the floor. Would anybody like to second it for, and then we can have a discussion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Peter. Discussion. Mr.
I wasn't going to pull this item, and I'm glad that it was. And the question I have, and I don't need an answer necessarily tonight, it could be Friday, but in several of the categories, and as an example, in varsity girls soccer at St. Louis High, the coach has paid about $1,000 more than the same. And between Marilyn and I, we found several others where there's a discrepancy, and it seems to be mostly in favor of St. Louis High.
Varsity girls basketball.
It's actually, the stipends are a part of a negotiated formula with the Teachers Association, and in those particular cases, and in most of the stipends, there is a longevity factor. So a coach that has been in the same position for a number of years is earning, in most of them, a 5% increase incrementally each year. And so a coach who is new to the sport is going to be getting a smaller stipend than somebody who's been doing it for several years. There are none of the athletic stipends are this way, but there are some other stipends that have factors that have to do with participation and number of students. But in all of these cases, the only reason there'd be a discrepancy for a like sport is because of the experience of the coach.
So as a can we suggest also that the winning record
become No. However, if a in CIF sanctioned sport, if a coach goes on in the playoffs, of course.
Does anybody have any advanced agenda items? And I would like to request more information on what Mrs. Chapman was talking about and what's going on with the computers in the high school.
Yes. Friday.
For a Friday pack would be fine, yeah. But I would like more information on that, please. Mr. Spatafor.
Okay, thank you. I would like tonight the board to make a decision regarding whether the academic freedom issue is going to go into a study session before we get too far into the year, and if it's going to be scheduled so staffing of it can be made. And I know that in the Friday packet on December 22nd, there were 4 points that were raised at that time regarding teacher evaluations, professional development, curriculum development, guidelines for teachers in the classroom. If those four are still going to be seriously considered as part of a study session, I would also suggest that the fifth item to be discussed on an academic freedom study session would be a discussion, because this is something I would like to know more about. The site structure for planning, implementing, and communicating site needs for curriculum, plant needs, and staffing to the administration. In other words, what does each site have in place to discuss those issues and how that's carried on to the administration?
Could you repeat the areas?
I didn't understand the question either, John.
No, it's not a question. It was the fifth point would be discussion of the structure at each site, each school, regarding planning, implementing, and communicating the needs at that site relative to curriculum, plant, the physical situation of it, and staff to the administration. In other words, how is that process structured, and how does the needs and the information and the situation at each site get to the administration and therefore become issues to be discussed? If we're going to do the academic freedom study session. But I just feel it's time that we either decide to do it or not do it, not have it sit there, you know, like the uncle that is visiting from some part of the world that no one wants to talk to. That's the first thing. And the second thing is we have a steroid policy update in March. I would suggest that we do the wellness policy at the same time, since there's a connection.
We have, and so what's the pleasure of the board? Do we calendar it or not? Do we decide to calendar it? Do we want to come up with a date? Is that your question, Mr. Spatafor?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've decided to do something with it, but it's sitting out in nether space.
If So
I think just what David said, there were the 4 points that Dr. Valentine mentioned after we had discussed this at one of our sessions that I mentioned from the Friday packet on December 22nd, those items. And then there was the additional one that I had an interest in, if the board does, relative to that process.
Okay, could I make a Dr. Valentine, I think you and I have talked about this. Would a March date for the study session on academic freedom be something that the staff could accommodate?
Yes, we could, and I would recommend doing it in that time frame as we get into budget season shortly thereafter.
Okay. So March? Okay. And then the only thing that concerns me about your fifth question is it seems like that could almost be a discussion, an hour's discussion in and of itself, to find out how things are communicated through every school site. And I feel I would be interested in doing that. I'm not sure that the discussion that we've proposed so far could accommodate that additional amount of information. Mrs. Dickinson?
My thought about that one is that might be like a follow-up. And we had a process to come up with our questions that we went through laboriously. And that, hasn't been raised yet. So I'm not sure we can throw in other questions right now because of our protocol, maybe. But it seems like an appropriate part of our protocol in terms of follow-up summaries, because it might become apparent that people are frustrated because they can't communicate concerns along the way and have a part in planning. I think that's what you're addressing, is how does communication happen? So maybe that could be a follow-up part of our study session instead of during it.
No, it's just something that has intrigued me when I go to different schools, when each school talks about the process at that site in terms of who participates, what the participation is, and how that develops or generates.
Could we bring that back? Okay. Anything else for advanced agenda items? Yes, Mrs. Dr. Holm.
Just as a formality, your protocol requires a motion and vote to schedule that study session.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Do we have a motion to schedule the study session for a convenient time in March?
I make a motion that we schedule the Teacher Academic Freedom Study Session for a convenient time in March.
It's been the motion by Mrs. Dickinson, seconded by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Anybody else for the advanced agenda? No. Item number 16, just a update on the possibility of a second dual language program on the coast.
This is a follow-up to a community member requesting information about the possibility of a second dual language program on the coast. We've talked about this possibility over the years and really have come to the realization that a second language program would probably compromise the existing program at Pacheco School. Currently, we accept all Spanish-speaking kindergarten students who are interested in attending Pacheco. However, each year we have a concern for whether or not we will have enough students to fill the program. We pulled Coast resident kindergarten students if we pull the Coast residents kindergarten students from Pacheco to attend a Coast program, we would reduce the number of Spanish-speaking kindergarten students at Pacheco and, again, compromise the program. Currently, Pacheco Elementary School serves our K-6 students well. We do have a waiting list, as I delineate here in the item. The likelihood, and what we find on that, the majority of the students on the waiting list reside in San Luis Obispo. The likelihood of them attending a school on the coast probably would not be feasible. Additional English speaker interest from the coast, we haven't established that, and whether or not that would sustain a second program is in question. To add an additional program, it took us at least 7 years as a project. We have the commitment of the staff of funds through a Title VII grant, and we have hired specialized staff. There is, you know, the possibility of sustaining a second effort to provide a second program would be difficult to duplicate. The other piece is restructuring an existing school on the coast or reopening a closed campus would deplete students from the traditional coast school.
Mentioned, well, maybe we should have another school. But I'm wondering if we could address that concern by accommodating everybody and having, I'm just look into it and letting all kindergarten students who want to be in it, be in it.
Yeah. Might I respond just to give a perspective on it? That would be doable if we could bring in equal numbers of Spanish-speaking students into the kindergarten program. The Pacheco program really is dependent upon the number of Spanish-speaking students who attend. So to introduce 15 new English speakers would probably disturb that balance.
And I just wanted to say that I thought the memo was very well written and thought out, and it was very helpful to understand all the complexities of that program and what it meant for both the coast and also for San Luis and for Pacheco. So it was really well done. Thanks.
And Mr. Peter?
Just a quick one. I agree with John. I thought it was well written. And because I've been pondering the thought, too, whether or not it made sense to locate or co-locate not only a dual immersion school like Pacheco, but potentially another magnet sort of school like Teach or something. Could we get in a Friday packet information about how many students from the coast attend both of those schools, Teach and Pacheco? It'd be interesting to know how many come in for that.
And then if I could ask maybe Dr. Valentine or Dr. Matakovich to just share with Dr. Hollifield, who was the speaker, and asked this question, what we found out and what our response to him was. I'd appreciate that.
I'll be happy to do that.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Shall we move on to item number 17, reports by board members? Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you. A couple of things. I wanted to find out if the board was okay with my sending a letter to the County Department of Education and also to the CSBA. Chris and myself and Dr. Valentine attended a webcast on January 18th out at the county office on the budget and on issues impacting public schools. And I thought it was an excellent program, besides being cost effective, because we were able to drive there instead of go to Sacramento where the speakers were. And it was a synchronous program, and there was an opportunity to ask questions also. So if it's fine with the board, I'd like to write a letter encouraging the county to continue to schedule webcasts at that you have one. And the second thing is that the Speaker of the House and all the candidates who are now positioning themselves to run for president are going to be there. And there's an opportunity, I think, regarding the No Child Left Behind and other federal programs in terms of providing costs for the mandates and the other factors. So I wanted to just share that with everybody, and we'll see how that progresses.
We're duly impressed, John.
Mrs. Dickinson and then Mr. Buckman.
Do you want to go first?
No.
Regarding Martin Luther King Day, we got the What's Buzzin' from Sinsheimer School with Joyce Hunter Principal. And she wrote down this year's theme, Remember, Celebrate, Act, a day on, not a day off. And in our class, you know, we actually heard some of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches again, including the one that's not heard that much. It was 1 year to the day before he was assassinated, which was Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence. What a genius level person in perceiving what's going on in the world. But I am motivated and inspired, and I'm flying to Washington, D.C. on Friday, to tell you the truth, and participating in the march and lobbying Congress on Monday, and so we're acting here. Someone's watching our house, so. No, I'm not, but if I find you there, I'll Have a cup of coffee with them. It's going to be cold.
Good for you.
Often before I sat on the board, I was able to report on the activities of the PTA at the county level, so I thought I'd just continue that tradition. On January 18th, the PTA at the district level did an internet safety class at Laguna Junior High along with the administration from Laguna Junior High. It was well attended. This time we added to our panel one of the owners of Coastal Computer so that parents could actually ask technical questions and get them answered. It went very well. January 22nd, the PTA sponsored a VAPA meeting where we had a speaker talk to all the PTAs from around the county about the visual and performing arts that Dr. Mintakovich just talked about. I did get a phone call from parents in Morro Bay. They asked me to report that they had just recently raised $30,000 to support Morro Bay High School baseball. So I am making that report, and I will be...
And it will originate out of Morro Bay. I think you'll see a lot of us there, although not myself. That's my son's 18th birthday, so I had to excuse myself. But typically we have pretty good board participation and central admin and teachers, and there's a lot of involvement because the Teach Foundation supports San Luis Coastal Schools via the many grants that they give to teachers. So I guess this is the first plug for Teach Foundation Telethon on March 3rd. Is it Channel 21? Help me out. Okay, on Channel 21 and Channel 20 in Morro Bay, and the wine auction, if that's the part you're interested in, comes in the evening between 7 and 10. So thanks.
And I'm just going to close with Mr. Buckman and I were at the Tri-Counties Education Coalition meeting, and we got to hear an address by Scott Himmelstein, who is the acting Secretary of Education. We had just talked about the budget, and he kind of reviewed the governor's budget priorities from a little bit different spin than what we had gotten from CSBA and what we had talked about earlier, so it was pretty interesting. And I'll be going to Sacramento on a week from Friday to start with the program committee for the next convention down in San Diego. So that'll be pretty exciting. And on that note, shall we adjourn?
Someone do it.
Okay.
Again.
Let's do it.
Make a motion.
Anybody would like to make a motion?
Russ, can you make that motion?
Russell.
I'll make that motion.
Mr. Spadafore moves. And
I'll make it in behalf of Glenn. Move to adjourn.
The Glenn Olker Memorial Resolution.